Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hi, I'm Leah Williamson, and you're listening to the Arsenal Women Arsecast on Arsenal. Yeah. You put it in my head. I'm normally a one-take wonder. Hi, I'm Leah Williamson, and you're listening to the Arsenal Women Arsecast on arseblog.com.
Take. Brilliant.
Thank you.
Hello and welcome to the Arsenal Women Arsecast on arseblog.com, the best podcast about the Arsenal women's team. It's the only one, but it's still the best. You're joined by me, your host, Tim Stillman, as well as our wonderful co-host, Pippa Monique. Pippa, what are you saying?
Hello. I'm good, thanks. Not enjoying the weather so far because I'm bunged up, but I'm good.
Good to hear. And as ever, we've got a really special guest on this week. I'm really, really delighted to introduce a good friend of mine, but also someone very well known, I think it's fair to say, around the kind of women's football circuit. And now, the women's football writer for The Athletic, Kieran Tatham. Kieran, hello there.
Hi, Tim. Thanks, guys, for having me. Nice build-up there. I'm not sure I deserve that, but I'll try and get to it on this podcast.
Kieran, the reason I wanted to get you on this month in particular was just because you wrote a piece for The Athletic recently on the Arsenal manager, Joe Montemurro. Do you want to just give the listeners a kind of brief outline of that article and what it was about?
Yeah, I think with joining The Athletic, I'd never ever say that what we're doing is better than anyone else, because I don't want to kind of be arrogant or big-headed, but I think what we try and do is something a little bit different. And my editors and I were quite keen to do something on Joe. Obviously, he won the league with Arsenal last year. They were coming into the season as the reigning champions. And rather than just writing your typical profile piece, we wanted to try and get a little bit of insight into what Joe the man is like behind Joe the coach. So I went about trying to contact some of those that maybe know him best. So spoke to his older brother, spoke to a friend of his that he went to school with, and obviously spoke to a couple of his players as well. So it gave us a nice little insight into what Joe was like growing up, what he was maybe like as a player, and maybe the characteristics that he has that kind of fed into him becoming a coach.
And just winding back slightly, you started writing for The Athletic, was it earlier this month, September?
By the end of August, mate.
End of August. So can I ask, because you obviously you had quite an exciting summer as well, can I ask how the role with The Athletic came about, and perhaps you can also tell the listeners a little bit about what you did during the summer?
Yeah, of course. I mean, I'm never going to deny when things kind of arrive at the right time, and I think with The Athletic, they pretty much assembled the writing team by going and cherry picking the writers that they wanted, and I make no kind of bones about it. They came to me. They knew that my contract with my previous role was coming to an end. They'd spoken to a few people for recommendations on women's football writers, and they contacted me and sold me a really exciting project. The Athletic, just to give a very brief overview, is an American-based company, but branched out into the UK at the start of August with a dedicated kind of arm to football. The American website or American arm has all your typical American sports, the NBA, the NFL, has US Women's National Team and the NWSL, but they've now branched out into the UK and have got dedicated reporters for every Premier League club. They've got some in Scotland, in a few of the Championship clubs, and asked me if I would be interested in becoming their women's football writer, and I snapped their hands off, because my previous role with FIFA, where I was a consultant for 6 months working on the Women's World Cup, and before that the Women's World Cup Trophy Tour, where we actually took the Women's World Cup trophy to all 24 countries that had qualified. My role with them had come to an end. It came to an end at the end of July. So I'm not going to deny it was a very, very fortunate opportunity that came up at the right time. And an opportunity to write about women's football full time, which it doesn't happen very often. There's not a huge number of opportunities out there. So it was something that I couldn't turn down.
That was an ideal solution for you, as you said, picking up a job straight away. But what has inspired you to start writing about women's football?
I give the same answer every time, Pippa. Kelly Smith is my inspiration for writing about the game. She's become a really good friend of mine and has really helped. I'm not going to deny it, really helped me get to where I am. Because when you know someone like Kelly Smith and she's willing to champion you and back you, then it helps you get to places that maybe others maybe haven't been so fortunate to do. So I met Kelly back in 2009. I used to work as a local journalist in Watford, where I'm from. Kelly's from Watford. We got introduced by a mutual friend. I interviewed her. First interview I did in women's football was with Kelly in her living room in Welwyn Garden City, where she used to live. And I was really overcome by how humble and by how modest she was. And we're talking about one of the best players in the world at the time. Kelly was lauded by so many and respected by so many, both here and in the United States as well. And the opportunity to interview and meet her was something that was... Yeah, it really hit me in a positive way, and that's where the interest in women's football started. So it's been 10 years, and I still speak to Kelly semi-regularly and stay in touch with her and obviously want to know how she's getting on.
Yeah, absolute legend there to have in your contact book.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Anna, sorry.
No, go for it. Sorry, Pippa.
I'm going to touch on the article that you wrote recently about Joan. What was the main aim in writing the article? What were your expectations on the response to it?
Yeah, I think for me, it was just making sure people learn something that they didn't know. And I think that's what we try and do with The Athletic. There are so many great articles out there and by so many great journalists. It would have been easy for me to write a profile piece about Joe, and there was already probably stuff in there that people knew about. I mean, I spoke to Tim before I'd written it, and I said, did you know this and did you know that? And in some cases it was, yes, I knew about that. Or in some cases, no, I wasn't. So, you know, it's difficult to kind of reinvent the wheel completely. But I think that for me, by speaking to his older brother and by speaking to one of his friends from school, we got a little bit of insight into Joe's life that maybe other people didn't know about. And I think that for me was the key thing. And in terms of response, I just want people to enjoy it, Pippa. You know, I'm not the greatest writer or the greatest journalist out there, but I just want to, I love telling stories. And that's why I got into the women's game, because there are so many brilliant stories out there. These players have great characters, great personalities, and they have a story to tell. And for years, they weren't able to tell that because the media just didn't take an interest. And now there's podcasts like yours and there's mainstream media interest where they now have a platform to be able to tell those stories and to speak up. And that's why I wanted to do what I do. And that's why I wanted to write the story on Joe.
And Kieran, how exactly did you make contact with Joe's brother? And how did you track down one of his best friends from school? And did Joe know about this? Were they all totally receptive to the idea? What was the story behind the story, I guess?
Okay, I'm going to be honest. I actually got the contacts from Joe directly. So I told him that I was writing a piece and that we wanted it to be a little bit different. And, you know, I said to him, look, I'd really like to speak to some of those people that know you best. And he was very receptive. I was fortunate that obviously Joe, like yourself, Tim, will know us from mixed zones and post-match media interviews. But I had the opportunity to sit down with Joe, with Heather O'Reilly over dinner last year. Actually, it would have been the year before last. It was last year, in Scotland. Scotland had a friendly against the United States up near Glasgow, and I met Heather and Joe for a very quick dinner before the game. And I think that was an opportunity there to break the ice and to kind of get to know him a little bit outside football. So when I contacted him, he obviously has an awareness of who I am and knew that, you know, through Heather O'Reilly as well, telling him a bit more about me and the work that I do, he was receptive. And Anthony, his brother, and his friend from school as well, were incredibly receptive. In fact, they were, you know, more than happy to talk about him and his achievements, because obviously they're very proud of him and what he's achieved. So it wasn't a difficult article to write, and Joe was completely on board and in the know. Didn't know what they were obviously going to talk about. I think I put it in the piece that he got a little bit emotional when we spoke about his dad. That was a story about that Anthony had told me about unfortunately their dad passing away 18 months before Joe got the job at Arsenal. But yeah, he was on board, but didn't necessarily know what we were going to talk about.
And I think what really comes across in the article as well, you know, from kind of knowing and speaking to Joe, I know like he takes his Italian heritage quite seriously, and I knew stuff like that he was fluent in Italian and liked Italian football and things like that. But I think what really came across in this piece, which perhaps I hadn't quite picked up on, was that particularly in his youth, he probably felt more Italian than Australian quite a lot of the time. Is that really what came across for you talking to his brother and you know his best friend from Melbourne as well? Did that surprise you at all?
Yeah, I guess it did surprise me a little bit, but it was probably because I didn't really know an awful lot about his childhood. It wasn't until I'd sort of started to do research and then spoke to especially to his friend that you kind of got an idea that he was very, very passionate about his Italian heritage. I think that they only spoke Italian in his house. Obviously, both his parents were Italian. And, you know, I think his love of football as well was probably influenced. And having two older brothers, and his two older brothers are a lot older than him. They're 11 years and 9 years older, respectively. So I imagine that they probably had quite a big influence on that as well. And, yeah, I think the fact that he took such an interest in football at a young age, and obviously he was kind of guided in the direction of the Italian national team, probably had a big influence on that. But I mean, you guys will have seen it from the first leg against Fiorentina. He did his press conference in Italian, and when he was obviously spoken to by Italian journalists, and yeah, clearly something that he's very proud of and wants to maintain and not forget about.
In terms of the article, again, because I enjoyed it so much, it's interesting to note the positive impacts and influence Joe's had on the players. I mean, Katie exclaimed that he basically saved her career at Arsenal by believing in her abilities and giving her a lifeline. And Jess Fishlock's comments on his man management. It seems as though the players respond very well to Joe's management style.
Yeah, definitely. And I don't think it's just limited to the players that you mentioned. I haven't actually met anyone yet who doesn't respect Joe and doesn't buy into his ideas. I think it would be fair to say that Arsenal had lost their identity towards the end of Pedro Martinez Losa's reign at the club. We don't really know an awful lot as to why that is, but they clearly, I'm sure Tim and yourself would agree that they didn't seem to know their roles. They seemed a little bit lost out on the field. And I think Joe kind of brought them back together, and because he's a fan of the club as well, I think he was as passionate as about driving it forward as they were. And you'll get managers who come into clubs and they're doing it because it's a job, but for Joe it's a passion, and I think that probably comes across and really kind of drives that into his players. And if you speak to someone like Jordan Nobbs, who is essentially now an adopted Arsenal fan, she having been at the club for so long, you know, I spoke to her as well, and she, her face just lights up when she's speaking about Joe. And I think that when you read about her, when she speaks about how he dealt with her injury, you know, she says, you know, Joe and I for the first few months didn't really speak very much, because he completely understood that no matter what he said, it wouldn't make any difference to Jordan. So the best way to try and help her deal with her injury and get over it is to leave her to do her rehab, get back in the time that is, you know, is right for her, not put pressure on her, and they will communicate when the time is right. And I think that's a manager with emotional intelligence as well as coaching intelligence. He understands his players, they buy into him, and believe me, Kate, Jordan and Jess Fishlock, obviously from his time in Melbourne, are not the only players that have positive things to say about him.
So what stuck out to me again is the fact that Joe's got some hidden talents. You noted that he became a freelance graphic designer whilst working with various youth teams in Australia to obviously supplement his income to support his family. So I guess you could say that he's both creative on and off the pitch.
Yeah, 100%. I had no idea about that until his brother had told me about that. I think that was that graphic design job or freelancing that he did essentially helped fund his UEFA licenses in Italy. So I think it was something that he really needed to do. Unfortunately, the coaching of youth football wasn't paying enough solely for him to be able to go out to Italy and do his badges. So he picked up a little bit of work, used his creativity, and was able to pick up a little bit of work. I'm kind of intrigued to know how whether Joe's been responsible for any of the creative gifts that we see on Arsenal's Twitter account. He's clearly got some talents there, but really creative guy, and I think that creative side is shown in the way that he wants his football team to play on the pitch.
And as much as it seems like Joe always had half an eye on coaching, there's one bit in the article where he kind of says that turning down a scholarship with the Australian Institute of Sport, which took the likes of Harry Kewell and Mark Viduka and Tim Cahill and these great Australian footballers, and he said turning that down was his biggest ever error. Did you sense any kind of regret about his playing career? Because it actually sounds to me, I mean, he stopped playing when he was 28, and it sounds to me like he could have made more of his playing career given his level of talent. Did you detect at any point a hint of regret about that from him?
Not really, no. And I think it's probably because he's gone on to be a great coach. I think there are players that we're aware of, you know, Jose Mourinho being one and Arsene Wenger being another. They didn't necessarily have the greatest careers as a player, but they went on to have magnificent, you know, careers as a coach. And I think Joe probably falls into that. I think we've seen players that have had to retire young have started their coaching education a lot earlier. Brendan Rodgers is another one. I think he retired something at like 20 years old because of injury and started his coaching almost immediately after. I think with Joe retiring so young, I think what it enabled him to do was to really like learn the game and educate himself on how to be the best coach. But yeah, I mean, look, it may well have been that Joe could have had a better career, maybe could have got some caps probably in the 80s and 90s, where probably not in the 80s, but maybe the 90s, where, you know, how successful were Australia in that period? The golden generation of Australian players came probably in the 2000s, didn't they? Your Cahills and your Vidukas and your Kewells. So, yeah, I'm sure there is an element of regret for not fulfilling his full potential as a player. But look, he's gone on to be a great coach, so I'm sure he doesn't think about it too much.
And my final question on Joe, I guess, before I think Pippa's got a couple of questions about the best awards in Milan last week. I often get the sense that a lot of male coaches in women's football are looking for a route into men's football. And I think sometimes this leads to quite outlandish tactical decisions, I think, because I think certain particularly male coaches try to get themselves noticed. I'm going to come out and say I'm kind of talking about Phil Neville here, to be honest with you, but I think he's far from alone in that respect. But I've never actually had this sense from Joe, even though he's worked in men's and women's football, particularly at Melbourne. In fact, he worked in both at the same time while he was at Melbourne. Do you get that same sense that actually he's not really looking for, in, you know, that he's not like just looking for a route into the men's game, that actually he does feel genuinely very passionate about the women's game and you know, staying involved with it?
Yeah, I genuinely do, and it was something that his brother said, is that Joe doesn't look at it as men's and women's football, it's just football. So he doesn't see a gender, he just sees 11 players on a field and he wants to get the absolute best out of them. So I agree with you. I don't think there's a desire on Joe's side to see this as a stepping stone into the men's game. Look, if Unai Emre loses his job and the club say to Joe, do you fancy taking on the men's team? There's no way he's turning that down. No way he's turning that down, because as an Arsenal fan who watched them as a kid growing up, that for him would have been the ultimate dream. There would have been, you know, Arsenal women wouldn't have been on his radar growing up. You know, we're talking about you know, a club that was successful from the kind of 90s onwards. But you know, if the men came knocking on his door, then absolutely he's taking that job. But you know, this is not against him, but you guys and I will know that that's not going to happen, because the outrage that will come with that from Arsenal fans who don't follow the women's team will, you know, would be just a PR disaster. But no, I don't get that from Joe. He's at a club that he absolutely loves. He's been backed by his hierarchy as well. He's been able to sign some incredible talent after a period where Arsenal were playing catch up with Manchester City and Chelsea, who overtook them. And now they're back where they want to be. And that's amongst the elite clubs, not just in England, but in Europe. And I'm almost certain that they will go far in the Women's Champions League, and they will again be contenders for every domestic trophy that they play in.
I hope so. But now, on to a bit of glitz and glamour. Okay. I saw that you attended the FIFA Best Awards this year in Milan. How was it, first of all?
Yeah, it was good. It was the second one I've attended. I went to the one in London last year, which was obviously right on my doorstep. So that was an easy one to kind of get to. But no, it's a typical FIFA event. It's everything that you would expect it to be. It's a little bit of a circus. Rose Lavelle, the US midfielder, described it as overwhelming, and it is a little bit overwhelming with all the security around it and all the fans kind of, you know, scattered around the sort of venue trying to get selfies with their favourite player. It's a little bit chaotic, but at the end of the day, it's also a really nice event to recognise both men and women for years.
Yeah, because I was at the FIFA Best Awards last year, and there wasn't as many female players in attendance. It was great to see a lot of the players attend the green carpet this year. But I have to ask, did you expect Rapinoe to win Player of the Year? And do you believe she is a worthy winner?
I did expect, based on the short list of three. Do I think she's a worthy winner? Look, she's a worthy winner in terms of how she performed at the World Cup and for everything that she does off the field. But if you're talking about a 12-month period, then no. I don't think she was the person that should have come out on top. The person that for me that should have come out on top wasn't even in the final three.
Who was it? Well, this might bring me on to my next question, actually.
I think there have been some phenomenal performances this year. And I actually was in a fortunate position during my role with FIFA to be able to work with the women's football department and actually help them put a long list together. So obviously there's an expert panel that narrows it down to 10 players. It then goes to the public vote. Obviously it then goes from 10 down to a final three. I helped the women's football department at FIFA put a list of 25 together alongside Jen O'Neill and a couple of other journalists, and obviously some internal colleagues as well. So we put a list of 25 together. Unfortunately, I can't disclose who was on that 25, but if I told you who my player of the year was, then it would be easy for me to kind of give it away. But look, I think Sam Kerr's had a phenomenal year. I think when you get back-to-back golden boots in two different leagues like she did in the NWSL and the W League down in Australia, I think she would have been a worthy winner. I think Pernilla Harder, the Danish forward, had another phenomenal season, winning a domestic double with Wolfsburg. Unfortunately for her, she wasn't at the World Cup. And look, you know, there's no denying it. I think Viv Miedema was phenomenal the last year as well. You know, to have the season that she did with Arsenal, to win the league, to help the Netherlands, help fire the Netherlands to the final. She rightfully was recognised by being, being in the shortlist or on the longer list. So it's a really difficult one to name one person, but I think for me it's probably Pernilla Harder or Sam Kerr with Viv not very far behind. The three that made it through to the final all had really great years, and I know Alex Morgan was one that people questioned and they said, you know, she only scored, you know, what was it, 5 goals against Thailand. But actually, if you look at Alex's year with the US, I think she got 18 goals in 18 games in 2018. She was CONCACAF Player of the Year, and she actually did achieve quite a lot with the US. It was just her club form that was a little bit off. It's difficult because the World Cup carries so much weight. I don't agree with it, but unfortunately, if you look at the FIFA Pro Team of the Year that was announced, you know, every single one of those players played at the World Cup.
It was always... saying that, my next question to you is, what, like, Vivian Miedema didn't make that team. So what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think Viv's unlucky. No doubt about it. You, as I said, it's based heavily on the World Cup, unfortunately. So my hope is that if Viv has the same year that she had last year, there is no major women's tournament next year. So Viv will definitely be in with a shout. But, you know, look, Marta didn't even make the list of 10 players that were up for the women's award, the individual women's award. So for her to get into the 11, the best FIFA Pro 11,
that's a lot.
Last year is a little bit confusing, but ultimately it's the players that vote. It's the FIFA Pro is a union. It's the players that vote for that award, and the players have voted for the 11 players that they feel should be in that side. But I think, unfortunately, we are falling into a similar trap to what we have in the men's game, in that players are being voted on reputation rather than performance. And we saw that with the men's award. I did a live Q&A on the Athletics website after the awards had finished, and the question that kept popping up most was why are Ramos, Modric and Marcelo in the team of the year when they've all been rubbish for Real Madrid? And it's reputation, it's profile. Everyone knows players who are voting in countries that we're not as familiar with know who those players are, and that's why they vote. And it's the same with the women's team. If you look at the names on that list, the vast majority of them are very high profile, and they're probably in for that reason rather than performances.
And yeah, I just to finish, I wanted to ask a slightly wider question on this, because you know, I think I understand the reasons that someone like Marta, who didn't even have a great World Cup, largely because she was injured, has had a lot of injuries this year. Has only scored, I think, 4 non-penalty goals all year. But I kind of get it, because she's the most famous, and let's face it, women's football is not easy to watch around the world, so it's not really easy to make an informed judgment on who is the best. But at the same time, with Miedema, it made me think, like, obviously most women's footballers don't really watch much women's football, I think it's fair to say. I think we can be adult enough to say that, but I kind of tend to think...
Yeah, without a doubt, mate. And I actually put that in a column that I wrote last week about players learning from someone like Heather O'Reilly, who champions the game, who really is a big kind of advocate and ambassador. And Heather made a point of trying to not only play the game, but she wanted to watch the game as well. And I can guarantee that she would not be watching games every weekend, but she would definitely be taking an interest in what was going on around other leagues and within the WSL when she was here. But I think it's fair to say that a lot of players don't watch the game. They love playing, but if they had a choice of watching, you know, the men's, for example, if the men's Champions League final and the women's Champions League final clashed, I guarantee the majority of women's players would watch the men's Champions League final, because a lot of these players, that's who they've grown up with. They support Arsenal or Liverpool or Real Madrid or Barcelona. They didn't grow up supporting Arsenal women, Chelsea women, Barcelona, because they didn't have a team until, 15, 20 years ago. There is a real problem in terms of women's footballers, not all of them, so I don't want to kind of paint them all with the same brush, but there was a problem with them having a knowledge about other women's footballers. And I won't name who it was, but during the World Cup, we're in the mix zone with a certain team, and a journalist asked one of the players, what do you think about, you know, the team that you're facing in the next round? And she said, I only really know one of their players. I don't know any of the others. And that it was a fairly high profile team that her side was coming up against. And that, for me, surprised me a little bit, because that is an indication that women's players aren't necessarily watching the game.
Yeah, and it kind of made me reflect on, you know, Marta's very famous, and obviously she's a huge figure in world football and everything like that. But it kind of made me think, and obviously in my WSL bubble and definitely my Arsenal bubble, perhaps it just made me reflect a bit and think, did what Vivian Miedema did last year, because I mean she did play in the team that got to the World Cup final. I don't think she had the best tournament herself, but you know, she broke her country's goal scoring record in front of the watching world. And it made me think, I wonder why that seems to have flown under the radar a little bit, and I wonder if it's just Viv's character, that she's, you know, she's quite quiet and keeps herself to herself, and frankly she doesn't strike me as remotely bothered about anything like this. In fact, I don't even think she's that bothered about scoring goals. I think she just happens to be really good at it, but I don't think she's a kind of one of those people who wakes up in the morning and thinks, I must score a hat-trick today. I think it just happens because she's so good. And I wonder if it's if you agree with me, Kieran, that perhaps there's something about her profile that perhaps counts against her when it comes to awards like this.
Yeah, I think that's really fair, mate. Viv, I think, has said herself she's not massively fond of social media, so she's not all over it. She's not necessarily speaking up on social issues or political issues like Megan Rapinoe and Alex Morgan are. She's not taking selfies or posting loads of Instagram stories, and that's not a criticism of players that are. For us as journalists, following players on social media is helpful for our job, because it sometimes you'll see something that you think, do you know what, that would make for an interesting article, or do you know what, that's something that I should speak to that player about. But Viv is definitely not one of those. Viv is definitely all business, and I think that's why she's got to where she has at such a young age. She is incredibly driven, she's incredibly professional. This is the impression I get, of course, incredibly professional, and she just wants to be the best player that she can be without the fuss surrounding it. She does media, I get the impression she does media because she has to and not because she wants to. She's always engaging with the media. I would never ever say that she hates it, but she does it because she has to. But I think she is pretty much focused on being the best player that she can be rather than being a celebrity, and that's what some of the players are getting to now. They are
tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts. Good news, ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog.
Celebrities, their status is at that level now where they are recognised in the streets and they are being pestered for autographs and for selfies. And I'm sure Viv will do all of that because it's part of being a footballer and part of the game growing. But she's not bothered by all that. That's the impression that I get. And I think that's why, as you say, she's at the age of, 22? She's broken her country's scoring record. She's won a Euros. She's got to a final of a World Cup. I think the move to Arsenal helped her a lot. She spoke to me a little while ago and said that she wasn't enjoying it at Bayern Munich. They didn't play a style that suited her, and I think she was a bit fed up of just chasing after long balls. I think Joe and Arsenal have given her a new lease of life, and it sounds weird when considering she's so young, but she stays at Arsenal for a while, I think she's going to break all sorts of records, and there's no end to what Viv Miedema can achieve as a player.
And I think that's a fantastic note to end this interview on. Kieran, thank you so much for speaking to both of us. It's been a real pleasure to have you on.
It's my pleasure, mate. Thank you guys for having me on.
Thank you.
And you can read Kieran's piece on Joe Montemurro, the link for which is in the description to this podcast. So do read that. And Kieran's written loads of other great articles as well. He mentioned one he wrote about Heather O'Reilly. Really, really good one with Casey Stoney as well, where he shadowed Casey Stoney, the Manchester United manager, for a day. So if you're a subscriber to The Athletic, I thoroughly recommend reading those articles. And I'd also thoroughly recommend, I'm going to guess you probably do already if you're listening to this podcast, but if you don't, follow Kieran on Twitter at Kiers Tatham. And Pippa and I will be back after the break with another exclusive interview. Now, at this point of the podcast, Pippa and I were going to bring you an exclusive interview with new signing Jill Roard, which we'd planned to do in the immediate aftermath of the Brighton game on Sunday. However, that proved not to be possible because, if you were watching the game, you'll appreciate this. About 2 minutes before the final whistle, the heavens absolutely opened at Boreham Wood, and we had an absolutely torrential downpour. And I guess you know what's coming, but the mix zone at Boreham Wood is completely uncovered, completely exposed to the elements. So it was actually quite difficult to get an interview, as the players quite understandably kind of ran inside and sheltered for cover. So we didn't manage to get the Jill Roard interview. We will try and do that for you again next month. However, in the immediate aftermath of the game, I did manage to speak to Vivian Miedema. I managed to tempt her over with an umbrella. And I'm very grateful to Viv for speaking with me. I asked her about her not being included in the FIFA Pro World 11 of the Year, and I just thought I'd drop that little bit of audio in, first of all because it's pretty interesting, but it also plays into exactly the discussion you've just heard Pippa and I have with Kieran Tatham about the reasons why Viv, despite her obvious qualities, sometimes finds it difficult to get this kind of recognition. Again, I'm hugely grateful to Viv for stopping, given the elements. But yeah, so I asked her that question. You can hear how I phrased the question. And this was her answer.
To be fair, not even. It's all about popularity. And I don't post it on Instagram or on Twitter, so that's probably what went wrong. But I don't give a shit about awards, what you said, but I think it is a joke.
So pretty unequivocal there, I'm sure you'll agree. I wasn't hugely surprised by her answer, actually. I said to her in the phrasing of the question, I know you don't care about this type of thing. And I really honestly believe that with Viv. That's the thing, because all players, understandably, are kind of trained to say, I don't care about individual awards, I don't care who scores, as long as the team wins, blah, 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 etc. And you kind of don't really believe them. And again, I think that's fine, isn't it? That's human nature, everyone. You know, if you're a footballer and your team wins 2-1, or you're a footballer and your team wins 2-1 and you score the winning goal, I mean, you're going to be happier about scoring the winning goal, aren't you? I think that's just human nature. But I really genuinely believe, from talking to Viv down the years, that she's not that concerned by this type of thing, which is why she doesn't have such a kind of extroverted presence on social media. But the other thing I can say about Viv is that she says what she means and she means what she says. So, you know, she doesn't do a lot of interviews. She doesn't kind of, she's not really an extrovert, certainly not in public. But when you ask her a question, she tells you what she's thinking. And I think it's fair to say that's what she did in that scenario. So in lieu of the Jill Roard interview, I did manage to catch up quite quickly with Joe Montemurro in the aftermath of the Brighton game. And it wasn't just me. It was a little bit of a round table situation. So you will hear other journalists asking questions as well. But we'll play you out with that, because he does talk a little bit about what's coming up in October, which is, you know, huge month for Arsenal with Champions League games and games against Chelsea and Manchester City. So here's Arsenal manager Joe Montemurro.
Now, the perfect start to the season continues. What did you make of the team's performance today?
It was good. It was very well controlled, and I thought that we might have had a bit of a lull from Thursday night, because the recovery's been very, very short. But I think she felt we were a lot more clinical today, a lot cleaner today than Thursday night. And it was good to sit and watch some good football.
And that second goal, I mean, that's surely as good as any we've scored this season. The combination play looked straight off the training ground, good being played down on the side and fizzing it in.
Yeah, we've worked a lot on set pieces and the organisation set pieces and exploiting their weaknesses, so it was good to get that. I actually thought the first goal was even better. It started from one side, gone to the other side. We've combined, dragged them out, and Kim's played a little 1-2 and gotten in. So there was a few of those. There was a few of those combinations. So, they're hard teams to unlock, especially when they're so deep and you can't drag them out. And it was good.
And Leah, obviously, we know she's always had those qualities and stepped into these kind of positions, but in this new role, just how well is she taking to it so far this season?
Yeah, look, Leah's a very proactive footballer, so she likes to turn forward, face forward, find the passes in between lines, and she's very good at that. She does it so well as a centre back, and we felt that doing it as a holding midfielder in the way we want to play, she gets her positioning right, she can find passes everywhere, and she was very, very good. She's got a little bit of a knock, which we're just sort of monitoring from the game the other night, and we decided to take her off and not risk anything.
We know you take the season in kind of stages. This is the first block over now as we go to the international break. How would you see it as a whole?
It's been very positive. It's been one where we work towards this platform of control, this platform of making sure that we're stable, and we've got that. And I think now we can be a little bit more ruthless and aggressive in front of goal going forward, and hopefully we'll take the next stage a little bit better.
And Joe, you always say that you're not really that you don't really think in terms of formations, for example, and lots of rotation, lots of fluidity. How good does that score sheet look today to you with four different attacking players coming up in central areas?
Yeah, actually, I was just looking at that. I asked, who scored the goals, and there was four different scores, and I go, excellent. They were all in pockets where they're rotating out and in and out, and it's the only way you're going to dislodge these teams. It's very hard to mark, and they're getting used to it, and they're understanding it, and with Jordan now, it's just a little bit more of an exciting stage, because now we've got the more forward runs going, so we can break lines. Otherwise, instead of breaking it underneath, we can now break lines beyond too.
And do you think that was perhaps Arsenal's most complete performance of the season so far?
It's a difficult thing to answer, because we look at the game in terms of how well we control the game, how well we find openings, and how well we exploit the other teams. And it was up there as one of them. So yeah, it was very good.
And a huge October ahead. Games against Chelsea, Manchester City, next round of the Champions League. How is everyone looking forward to that?
Yeah, look, we're just speaking with the guys too in the sports science department, and we've been able to manage and rotate. Now, we gave Jill a bit of a spell, we gave Beth a little bit of a spell, because we know they're going into big international weeks. They're both going to be featuring quite a lot, so we just felt they've played a lot of minutes, so we felt to give them a rest today and get them ready for October. So we've been able to rotate the team sensibly to make sure that everyone's ready for a big October, which we're really looking forward to.
Just one last one. You touched on Jordan. How important is she to the side? Obviously, it's one of the players of such high quality. Did she make a difference?
Yeah. Look, Jordan. Has different qualities to what Viv has, or to what Kim or DVD have, and she complements other areas of the game, which is very, very important. But apart from having Jordan on the park, she's amazing off the park too, and we love her.
No worries. Cheers.
All good, guys.
Cheers. Thank you.
And that's all we've got time for this month's episode of the Arsenal Women Arscast on arsblog.com. Thanks so much to our guest, Kieran Tatham from The Athletic, on behalf of myself and my fellow host, Pippa Monique. We're really grateful to Kieran for his time. And do make sure you check out that article on The Athletic, where Kieran talks to Joe's childhood friend and his older brother. Really, really fascinating stuff, and it's really great to have Kieran on as well. He's someone I've had earmarked as a guest for quite a long time, even before he took his role at The Athletic. Apologies we weren't able to get the Jill Roard interview. We'll try and do that for you next month, but also grateful for Joe Montemurro for his time, and I guess to Vivian Miedema for her time as well. That's all we've got time for this month. Thank you very much for listening. Hope you enjoyed it, and we'll speak to you again next month on the Arsenal Women Arscast.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.